So today we welcome to the program State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy, also Dr. Abe Abdul-Wahid of Lux Dental here in Quincy, about a proposal to eliminate sales tax on PPE, personal protective equipment. And Abe, I guess this was something that you kind of thought would be beneficial to folks in your field, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. As you know very well, for many small businesses, pretty much all public-facing small businesses, PPEs are critical. They're not optional. They're not a choice. Without PPEs, we really can't function, and particularly in the medical field. Gloves, face masks, face shields, and with us in the dental field, there are tremendous volumes of PPEs that are necessary in order for us to provide care safely and appropriately for our patients. You know, as always, Representative Chen has been very much receptive to new ideas to protect the public and also benefit our profession. So I had approached Representative Chen in regards to how could we laser focus initiatives that would benefit the public, benefit small business, and also benefit the healthcare industry. And that's why we're here today to talk to you about why it's important that we try to eliminate sales tax on PPEs.
So Tacky, what did you think when Abe came to you with this idea?
Yeah, we had a conversation about this and the challenges, obviously in the dental industry at the time, but we started thinking a little more broadly about how the PPE has become part of our lives. Beyond just the mask mandate, you know, we are using it more often, even, you know, at home and going outdoors and driving around and everything else. Like, you know, don't leave home without it. Remember the old credit card? I can't remember which credit card it was, but the old credit card ad, it's like,
yeah,
don't
leave your... American Express with Carl Malden.
Yeah, the Amex card. So same thing now. I mean, you can't leave home with your mask. Same principle. But as we're discussing the matter, well, the dental profession, you know, uses a lot of PPE. You think about people at storefronts, people, you know, trying to run their business, small business, but even people commuting these days. And unlike hospitals, and they're not for profits. So what about everybody else? So if you're a not-for-profit agency, you don't pay sales tax to begin with. The big hospitals are not-for-profit agencies, but everyone else isn't. And since it's become a necessity, and under the Massachusetts sales tax, necessities are not sales tax. I know it's a little bit, if you look at the law, it can be a little bit like, well, what's necessity? What's not a necessity? What's what the state says? So for example, non-packaged food is a necessity. So you don't have a sales tax on it, for example. Periodicals are not sales taxed. So we do provide sales tax exemptions for very specific things that we consider a necessity in our lives. And PPE has become it.
So would this be a permanent exemption or temporary?
I put the bill in as a permanent exemption. Obviously, like all bills in the legislature, it's up for conversation about where it's going to go. But I think we're going to be living like this for some time. And any way we can help businesses out on what has become an essential product to operate, I think is crucial. So a lot of the issues are sales tax exemptions, personal needs. Like I said, we eat, so there's food, so personal need. But this is beyond just that, you know, the way the world we're living in right now.
So, I mean, does the bill that you file actually define what PPE is, actual specific items?
Yes, I define basically four kind of items. So I define a face covering that actually covers your mouth and nose. It doesn't matter if it's cloth or paper or whatever, it's got to be doing both. Or face shield, but a face shield actually covers your entire face. So it actually has to do those products. We require gloves, but it has to be a not quite medical grade gloves, but it's not like ski gloves, that makes sense. You know, you're not using cloth gloves. You have to use a degree of material that's water resistant. Can't remember the name of the material. Actually named the materials. And we also provide some medical grade smocks. So, you know, we think about it, well, I don't need a smock. Well, yeah, but if you're in food services, a smock becomes pretty important, much more important. But it's not just, you know, just any kind of apron. You actually have to have a medical grade item, which medical offices would use, veterinarians' offices would use, And, you know, I would think food services and other places where you're finding challenging to get conventional items would turn to PPE if it becomes available and want to encourage better quality products to be used in retail as well.
Sure. Any estimate as to how much that would cost the state in sales tax revenue if that were to pass?
No idea. We've never used this much of this material, I think, ever in the state this past year. I'm going to bet that the amount of material we use on masks and gloves and smocks, I mean, no one had a face shield until this past year.
No, so, maybe just a welder, perhaps. That's about it, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you have to eat a profession where you have to have that type of shield. You know, emergency medical personnel, hazmat people, and right, iron ones for steel ones for welders. But I don't really know because it was such an abnormal situation, and the sheer volume of it's used, and it's all it's all disposable. People throw away masks, people throw away gloves. I know you can rewash cloth gloves, but only a limited number of times. So, you know, this is kind of uncharted territory, and the cost to Commonwealth. I don't know yet. It's you can't use any number prior pandemic because those figures wouldn't make sense.
So Abe, would something like this really help, you know, you and your business and in your colleagues' businesses?
Absolutely. And when we're talking about cost, it's important to focus on the fact that the cost of business, the increased cost of business is costing some of our small businesses to close. That in itself is a loss of revenue to the state and to the city, and not to mention the loss of, you know, employment opportunities when small businesses close. So it's prudent and critical that we support small businesses and especially the healthcare industry in order for us to continue to provide care. There's been a survey that was done very recently by the Medical Group Management Association, where they've indicated that 98% of healthcare facilities have reported increases in their overhead due to PPEs. 15% reported a cost increase of 101%. 16% reported it up to 41 to 50%. I mean, these are astronomical numbers. If we're trying to continue to provide care, access to care, it's important that, you know, the state facilitates us in doing so. And PPE has become a huge issue for us. You know, there's a global shortage of PPEs. There are speculators out there. So it's become very, very difficult for us to keep our operations intact. So, you know, initiatives like this will certainly help not only the medical field, but all small business and even families that have now had to go out and purchase PPEs that they normally wouldn't have to do so.
What was it that initially inspired you to propose this? Was there one single event that occurred, or somebody tell you something that it's, you know, shot up a spark in your mind and said, oh, let's make a change here?
Almost, we are forecasting about 20% of dental providers no longer, not willing, but no longer being able to continue in being Medicaid providers. 20% of dental facilities nationally are at the verge of no longer being able to become Medicaid providers. That is huge. That's a large number. We need to continue to provide access to care to everybody, to the whole entire spectrum of this country. And if 20% are no longer able to provide care, what are we going to do with those patients? Knowing this, you know, we need to really focus on initiatives to help healthcare providers to continue to be able to sustain and provide care. So Tacky and I have been sitting here, trying to brainstorm, trying to think of ways that we can help our community. And this is just one of the many initiatives that we've been considering.
What's the process, Tacky, for this bill now? Where is it sitting? Where is it going?
Well, the legislative session just started as our Tacky Talk on Friday. So we're going to plug my Tacky Talk with you. So tune in on the weekends. You get a YouTube from us someplace. But filing deadline is the third Friday in February. So because of the pandemic and the way we're working virtually and just the challenges of technology and everything else, we've extended deadline for filing to the third Friday of February. Staff informs me that co-sponsoring is going to be available for 1 week after the filing deadline. So they go right up to the first day of March, I believe, or just before. As you can imagine, my staff is right now trying to get the bill priority list together. People have seen my list in the past. It's quite extensive how many things I file. So we should have the computer system open soon for us to file, but bill's drafted. We're just waiting for the system to be activated at this stage.
Okay. And I mean, do you want to take a guesstimate as to how much support it will receive and if the governor would even support it?
I don't know what the governor would do because he never tells us what he's going to do anyway. It's his MO. But as far as our colleagues in the legislature, we'll start shopping the bill around once the system is open for people to co-sponsor. It's pointless to ask for something that they can't sign on to because they can't log into the system to sign on to. And the way the system's set up, we can't sign you on. You have to sign yourself onto a bill. Does it make sense? So you don't have fraudulent sign-ons.
Yeah.
So until the system's activated, we're kind of stuck on co-sponsors. But I'll be reaching out to some other industry folks beyond Dr. Abe and the dentist, but I'll be reaching out to some other industry folks as well to discuss it with them about mustering some more support for a bill like this.
Okay. Dr. Abe, where do dentists stand right now in the line for vaccinations?
This is a very interesting topic. We are in phase one. But having said that, there's been a slight delay, maybe a major delay in terms of providing us access to the vaccine. The Dental Society has reached out. Representative Chan has also written to the executive in terms of inquiring about this. But we are in phase one, but we appear to be at the tail end of phase one. And as you know very well, and so does TACI, we do generate aerosol. And as you know, even during the pandemic, many of us had been on the front lines trying to help divert emergency patients from our hospitals so that dental emergency wouldn't inundate the hospitals. As you all know, right now we've even volunteered as a profession to vaccinate patients. So the oral health, the dental health community, and I mean the team, not just the dentists, we've always been the forefront in terms of serving our community and doing the best we can. So it's been a little bit of a disappointment that there has been a lack of clarity in terms of where and when our profession, the dentist, the hygienist, the assistants, the administrative staff would get vaccinated. So that's basically where we stand.
Hmm. What are you hearing about that, Bacon Hill, Jackie?
Well, frankly, us in the legislature is also somewhat confused about this. When they put out the first list of vaccination priorities, they changed again in 2 days. Then they changed again in 3 days. And then they changed again last week. And this has continued to be an ongoing saga between the legislature and the executive branch. We don't have a say in the vaccination priority list. Make that very clear to everybody. You can call me, happy to listen to your concern. I'm willing to convey your concerns to the executive about your interest to move a profession up. Just to let everyone know, legislators are not on the list whatsoever. Government officials are not, appointed government officials are not. We're lumped in just like everybody else regarding our licensed professions. If you're a licensed profession, in my case, lawyers are not anywhere in one or two. We're definitely in the bottom of the pack. So there is no special preference there. My colleagues have expressed concerns a few more than once now about some better clarity about everything, whether it be subdivision of healthcare providers or even issues such as people with severe autism and the difference between a day hab versus a day program. Because day habs are listed in the phases, but day programs for people with developmental I can't remember these old, they keep changing the anagrams on me, but every person with developmental issues is not listed in the phase list. So we're not sure where they all fit in either. So if you're in one program, but not another, where do you go? And this is causing a lot of confusion and anxiety among folks that I've been getting calls on. And I don't have an answer for them because you're just looking at the list. It doesn't state your specific circumstance.
Yeah.
So, we'll continue to advocate to the executive branch of the COVID-19 command center to get greater clarity about everything from medical profession, you know, right into phase two, folks. Like if you're age 65, you work at a grocery store, you're ahead of the line than just 65-year-old person that's accountant. So this has been brought up to me by our favorite district attorney, more than once, about how does this logic work? And frankly, I am confused as well, because your risk of death raises significantly the older you are and your different health conditions. So not like you shouldn't get front-facing workers vaccination, but if you're a person as a front-facing worker that has to be a 65, of which there are plenty of, and you vaccinate them along with everyone else is 65, you capture the whole audience at the highest risk of death first.
Yeah.
As opposed to try to do the whole a professional segment. So it's very interesting how the governor's vaccination program set up. It's designed around professional description, job description, not around entirely around age and health conditions. And I think this is one of the big confusions that's going on here with the legislature and the general public regarding the vaccination list.
Yeah, I know we've talked about this before on our podcasts, but I know you seem to think that this needs to be more of kind of a, like almost a military operation where emergency management steps in and really kind of, you know, designates mass vaccinations.
Well, the Biden administration apparently listened to us in our podcast. He's already directed FEMA to direct all 50 states MEMA to then direct all the field emergency management below MEMA in the municipal and county levels to develop a vaccination distribution program. So it looks like Joe Biden thinks this is a great idea. It's going to take time, of course. I mean, FEMA is not going to magically snap their fingers and put it together, but given the fact their expertise is rollout emergency management, I expect them to start putting a plan together or some, I'm sorry, I'm going to say this awful, but it's going to be some vague details early on, I suspect in the first couple of weeks from FEMA, and in greater detail as they start to come to a final plan.
Yeah.
I think the president's asked for a 30-day report from FEMA, if I remember correctly. So I suspect in the first week we're going to get some vague trickling of information before it becomes more more clear.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that right now, you know, it's being done through pharmacies, hospitals, not have food centers, but even my healthcare provider, because I use Atrius Healthcare, they've informed me they don't have vaccine. They informed me by email that they have Moderna, and they will eventually open a scheduling time for them with people more comfortable doing it in a medical setting versus Gillette. I'm not saying one is better than another. I think it's a comfort level of individuals about what setting they'd like to get their vaccine in. So, you know, we're all in wait and see mode.
Yeah, I know the town of Braintree is accepting applications, registrations, if you will. I don't know if they have a vaccine yet. I don't know, you know, how much they have, if they do have any, but it's starting to trickle down to the community level.
Well, as Dr. Abe correctly points out, you have to have people that actually knows how to put a needle in an arm. I mean, that's also part of it as well. So, you know, obviously we're not going to inoculate each other. Well, Dr. Abe knows how to inoculate because he knows how to use a needle, but I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a logistics there. I think as part of consumer confidence in healthcare that you have somebody there that would do it correctly. And of course, you have to be monitored afterwards to see if any adverse effects, which are very, very low a possibility, but safety is a concern. Mm-hmm. So despite just getting an inoculation, you do have to stick around in one spot and have somebody there that's medically capable to address an issue. If you're one of the very, very, very small percentage of folks that could have an adverse reaction.
Yeah. Dr. Abe, you know, you'd mentioned that obviously the dental profession has been dealing with the aerosol infections for centuries, I guess. What can, say, long-term care facilities, nursing homes, learn about safety from the dental profession?
That's a very good question. It's the first time I've ever been asked. I'll tell you this, the dental profession has had a very, very long-standing tradition of being exceptional in the area of infection control. You know, there's been less than 1% transmission to dentists, and we're not even sure whether the transmission occurred within our dental practice. We are meticulous in terms of, you know, managing infectious byproducts. We are masters in universal precautions. We've been utilizing universal precautions, meaning that we assume any patient, every source is a potential infectious source. I think that a lot of these practices that, you know, we've been conducted are very, very well known. And, you know, once again, the dental industry, as always, we stand ready to serve and educate in any way we can in terms of helping our colleagues out. We've already stood, you know, stood up in order to help vaccinations. We want to make sure that if there is a need for vaccinations, vaccinators, we will be there when we are ready to serve.
All right. Anything else you'd like to add, gentlemen?
Well, I mean, continuation of reminding folks that, you know, definitely wear masks, good hygiene, as I keep complaining about the fact that everyone should know how to wash their hands at this point, I hope. But also, you know, maintain social distancing. I had a conference call with Social Hospital, or it's now called Social Health Systems, on Friday. The curve is bending. The governor's talked about it as well, but it's not bending fast enough. And the hospital system in the greater Boston area is pretty much near capacity, where we don't want to open another field hospital. No hospital, no medical provider wants to see another field hospital go up. But that is the distinct possibility at some point down the road to have one in the Southeast region, like we saw during the middle of the summertime. So, you know, just want to remind folks again, I mean, you know, the only way we can take care of COVID and take care of ourselves is that we do take care of ourselves and do our part, you know, to keep the spread from continuing. And, you know, that's all I can do, keep reminding folks.
If folks want to comment on your bill, Tacky, how do they do that?
Well, they can call at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. You can try my email at tacky, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. So tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I do remind folks my email box is now starting to get inundated as we move into bill filing season. But also, if you're not in the Quincy area, definitely please contact your local legislators at malegislature.gov, or just use a search engine. You can just Google it up, or Bing it up to find your own legislator as well. So you can find your state senator and your state rep, and contact them if you're not from the Quincy area.
Great. Doctor, anything else you'd like to add?
I want to thank you, and I want to thank Tacky for always, you know, helping us bring the medically critical information to the forefront. It's important that we continue to work together, you know, journalists, legislators, because only then would we be able to protect our communities. We can't do it all on ourselves, on our own, and we definitely need your help. So I really appreciate all of that. Thank you so much.
Very welcome, gentlemen. Thank you both. Always great to talk to you. And Tacky, we'll catch up with you again later this week.
We'll do. Always look forward to your beautiful smile every week throughout this pandemic.
Likewise. All right. Be well. Take care.
Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.